6:14. It is Tuesday. This is 1320 WILS, more compelling talk radio. Well, Michigan State University today announcing that it will be setting up and operating this registry of Flint residents exposed to high lead levels. It's going to help them connect to programs that will help them with their health. The doctor who really discovered this from the get-go was Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha. She's an MSU researcher and a Hurley Children's Hospital physician. Dr. Hannah Atisha, great to have you on WILS.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Wow. I guess, I mean, this is for life. You're going to be known as the person that discovered the Flint lead poisoning problem. What has that done for your life? Go ahead.
It's kind of crazy, but I hope I'm more remembered for what we did next and how we were able to really mitigate the impact of this crisis and make the lives of the people of Flint much better. Mm. And that's what this registry is all about, too.
And the moment you discovered it, was it in your mind where you're like, wow, this is going to be citywide? Or how did you first come about this issue?
Yeah, so we started hearing about lead in the water, and when the pediatrician hears the word lead, it's really a call to action. We know what lead does. It's damning. It impacts a child's entire life course trajectory. Mm-hmm. So when I heard about the possibility of lead in the water, I quickly decided to look into the research to see if that lead was getting into the bodies of our children. And right kind of when the moment that we saw our research and we saw this increase, we realized it was population-wide, mm-hmm. you know, that it impacted every single person who drank this water, cooked with this water, and that we really needed to start thinking about tomorrow. What are we going to do to preserve the tomorrows of our kids? And that has been my charge, is throwing absolutely everything at these children and adults, but especially the children, because they were most impacted by the lead exposure, to make sure that we do not see the consequences, the cognition consequences, the behavioral consequences.
Have you seen an impact on your patients since this began?
Yeah, so it's really hard to say. We've seen a lot of impacts of the water crisis, mainly the stress and the trauma. It's like a community-wide PTSD. We see the anxiety and the guilt and the anger. Those are the palpable things that we see every day. But we need tools like this registry to look at the population as a whole. Mm-hmm. For example, how are all the children doing on development, and how are they all doing in terms of getting to the doctor? So that's why this registry is critically important, because it gives us the tools of epidemiology, which is looking at the population as a whole, mm-hmm. To see how we are doing.
So how does this, it's going to be voluntary. How is it going to work exactly?
Sure. So, you know, it's modeled after many similar registries. We've been working closely, for example, with the people at the World Trade Center Registry. They're on their 15th year of the registry. So, you know, when people are, you know, there's a population-wide exposure to something, mm-hmm. There's an opportunity to create a registry. So people have to voluntarily sign up. So this is not something that we're just going to automatically enroll people. People have to make the decision that they want to be part of this, that they want to share their information, that they want to get connected to resources.
Okay.
And once they sign up, and there's going to be many different ways, online, over the phone, in person, then there'll be kind of baseline surveys and assessments and different things for different ages. Mm-hmm. And that will prompt opportunities to get connected to services. So the most important part of this registry is not to collect information or data or to do research. The most important part of this registry is the ability to improve the lives of the people of Flint by connecting them to resources.
So, Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha with us here on WILS, MSU researcher. Now, you, where are we now? What, 2-3 years away from the initial exposure?
So April 2014. We are in our fourth year in Flint, where people are drinking water without, you know, that they shouldn't be drinking.
And we hear from residents, we've had them on the show, who say they don't believe the MDQ now telling them that the lead levels are back to normal. What do you tell patients?
Right. Yeah, so that's entirely understandable. There are huge trust issues in Flint. But I tell patients, I was in clinic this morning and this afternoon, every kid that I see, they must continue to use a filter. Even if the water levels are back to normal, Flint is embarking on massive infrastructure work. We are replacing our pipes. Whenever you replace pipes or you do any kind of underground work, you disrupt the scale, the lead scale, and that increases lead in the water. Mm-hmm. So because whenever this kind of underground work, people have to use filters. So that's why for the next few years to come, people in Flint must continue to take precautions, use filtered or bottled water. Nice. The media has left, but this is a crisis that's nowhere near over.
After 4 years, though, do you have patients where you can clearly see that they've been cognitively affected by the lead exposure?
Yeah, so once again, no, because you need that population health data. You know, if I diagnose a kid today in clinic with a learning disorder, was it the water? Maybe. Was the kid always supposed to have this? Maybe. Was it because of a bazillion other reasons in a child's life? Maybe. So the most important thing is getting those kids connected to the resources to limit the impact of that.
Okay. So are you saying, in a sense, we'll never really know the full impact?
Well, we will with a thing like a registry. That is this population-wide tool that will help us. But my personal goal is that we do not see the consequences of lead exposure. We know what that does. We know that what that does to people. We've known what it has done for centuries. Our goal with this registry is to see how we can do something that's never been done before, how we can be proactive and positive and mitigate the impact of exposure. So in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, we can share with you the data that, hey, this happened to Flint, but because we did this, this, and this, you know, this is how our people turned out. Hmm. And we're hopeful that these lessons that we learn, we can share with other communities because, you know, by and large, there are Flints everywhere.
Yeah. So, but right now, after they were exposed, is the lead still in their blood, in their body somehow, or what happened?
Yeah. So lead is an irreversible neurotoxin. Once it comes into your body, it causes damage. It lasts in your blood for a very short period, but it can get stored in your bones for decades. Mm. And when you are, for example, stressed or pregnant or you have poor nutrition in the future, it can come back out of your bones and cause that neurotoxicity all over again. So that's why the interventions that we have advocated for, that we have put in place, need to continue for years, if not decades. This is, you know, so many things that we're doing in Flint are awesome, but they're only funded for 1 or 2 years. These are things need to be in place for years, if not decades, to make sure that our children recover and thrive. And they are owed this because these kids did nothing wrong besides, you know, live in a city that didn't treat its water properly.
Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha, she is an MSU researcher and Hurley Children's Hospital physician, and she is the doctor, in fact, who first discovered increased lead levels in young patients she was treating in Flint. Dr. Hannah Atisha, thank you for joining us on WILS.
Thanks so much for having me.